Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Where you live can determine how long and how well you live. In Morgan County in Southeast Ohio, there is no hospital, and the last doctor retired in 2024. Residents must drive at least 45 minutes to access health care. And that's just one example of a growing health care crisis in rural Ohio. Today, we're exploring the issue of rural health care and creative solutions. Columbus Dispatch healthcare reporter Samantha Hendrickson recently wrote about rural healthcare deserts, and she joins us now. Welcome to All Sides, Samantha.
Thank you so much for having me.
I've never had to say rural so many times. All right. So the headline of your story really sums it up. Rural Ohioans are facing a deadly shortage of healthcare options. Now, this isn't a new problem. It's an ongoing one. How did we get here?
Oh, that's the question, Amy. That is a very complex question because healthcare is so complex, you know, no matter where you are, no matter at what level it is. And unfortunately for rural systems, it gets even more complex when you take population into account, when you take just healthcare touches every piece of infrastructure that we have in the same as we do for politics, especially in this day and age. You know, like you said, where you live determines your health. But there's so much more that goes into that, right? There's transportation, like whether or not you have access to that. There's whether or not you live in a district like that was possibly redlined like back in the day. There's so many different factors. Mm-hmm. So the answering that question is really, really difficult.
Yes. Well, I led off with the example of Morgan County. It's mm-hmm. one of the smallest counties in the state, just under 14,000 people. It may be an extreme example, but it's not a total outlier.
No.
It illustrates the problem, though. There's no hospital in the county, and the last doctor in the county retired in 2024. So what options did you find for people, the 14,000 people who live in Morgan County? What do they do when an emergency happens?
So if they want to go to a hospital, right, they have to go to Zanesville, which on a good day could be a 30-minute drive. Mm. On a bad day, when there's traffic, because there's not very big roads in Morgan County, you are looking at a 45-minute drive. And if you can't make it to Zanesville, if Zanesville's full, you got to go to Marietta. And sometimes you have to go all the way to Athens, which just increases your driving time. So what a lot of people do is they go to the local fire department. We were really blessed to be invited by the M&M Fire Department, by John W. Finley. He is the mayor of McConnellsville, which is a county seat of Morgan County. He's lived there his entire life. He's been mayor since 2011, I think. And he invited us out there just to see what it's like. And he told us that for every dozen or so calls that they go on the day, two or three of them are people seeking what you would normally go and see your primary care doctor for, not what you would see like an emergency service worker for. Mm-hmm. Because that's often the closest option that they have for care. Like, hey, my heart's beating really fast. Can you do a quick checkup on me? Can you read my heart rate? Can you do something like that? Something that we would normally go, you know, see a primary care doctor for. But mm-hmm. it all is falling back on these emergency service workers because for a lot of people, that's the closest option.
So they're calling 911 for maybe not, I mean, they feel it's an emergency to them probably, but
yeah.
It's maybe not an emergency, you know, something that you could go to a normal doctor for if you can make an appointment. But are they also using 911 to get transportation? Like they know they need to go to the hospital. So they were like, well, I'll call 911 and then they'll drive me the 45 minutes there.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just transportation to get to Zanesville and access a service that might not be in their particular area, whether it's at the hospital or not. Right. So something that M&M Fire Department said is like, yeah, sometimes people just use us for transportation because they have a lack of access to it. Maybe their car's broken down or something, or they can't afford to drive a 45-minute drive. So there's that part of it, too, that's straining resources. But, yeah, it's kind of like a taxi drive into the city. And it's understandable because there's just a lack of resources there.
So give us an idea of a geographical region that we're talking about when we say a healthcare desert. Is it considered a desert if you have to go more than 30 minutes? I don't know if there's like a rule to it.
So a healthcare desert is defined as like a geographic area where there is a lack of a service. And that can be a hospital, that can be a specific care provider. So like we have different kinds of healthcare deserts, right? Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily just one encompassing term that has a single definition. Again, very complex, just like this entire issue.
Yeah.
So a healthcare desert might be like, say, if we have a county that has no maternity care desert, which Ohio has 13 of those, 13 counties that have no maternity care wards in them. It might be a cancer provider. You know, some people have driving all the way to Columbus to get cancer care at like the James, for example, because there's no cancer facility or treatment facility in their county. So it can range from an entire hospital like Morgan County, or it can be something like, okay, well, I might have my primary care doctor, but I don't have somebody who can take care of my kid's epilepsy or take care of my kid's autism or, you know, something like that, the specialized care, and they have to drive sometimes, you know, 50 to 100 miles. Like Southeast Ohio, women in Southeast Ohio have to drive roughly, 50 to 100 miles to get specialized care for themselves and their children.
Some of these places, are they lacking even like the urgent care option or like a CVS Minute Clinic? Do they even not have those?
Yeah, there's a couple of months ago, OSU published a study that talked about even pharmacy deserts. Like we have, and that was specifically defined as a 10-mile radius, I think, where people don't have to drive a certain amount of miles to get to even just a pharmacy. So yeah, there's no CVS Minute Clinic going on there, and there might be an urgent care option, but a lot of those urgent cares, you know, something that John Finley was telling us about is there's a lot of accidents out in Morgan County, car accidents. There's a lot of windy roads, and he took us on these back roads, right? Like there's a lot, there's very hilly, they're very rough, a lot of them are one way, there's no guardrails on a ton of them. I can't imagine getting an ambulance up and down those. But there are a lot of car accidents, and they've had people pass away in the backs of their ambulances. There might be an urgent care, you know, 15 minutes away, but they can't perform a surgery on somebody. Mm-hmm. And so you have to take them. Making that 30-minute drive just between Zanesville and McConnellsville, I can't imagine trying to stabilize somebody for that long, you know, who's actively dying. But that's, they've had people die in the backs of their ambulances. Because
of
that.
The distance. Yeah. We're talking about rural healthcare deserts with Columbus Dispatch healthcare reporter Samantha Hendrickson. You mentioned the maternity care. The March of Dimes designates 13 of Ohio's 88 counties as maternity care deserts. Seven of those counties are in Southeast Ohio. So when women are pregnant, they have to work harder to find proper care. Is that the right way to say it? They have to drive farther or put more effort into it.
Yeah,
I guess.
And I'm just thinking, like, imagine being 9 months pregnant and trying to drive 50 to 100 miles, 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, or even just there might be a hospital that's able to, you know, can have your baby there. But for anything else, you know, before or after, you're going to have to go somewhere else that can be up to 2 hours away.
Yeah, if your baby needs a NICU service or something like that, they're going to have to transport you somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The safety nets, I mean, are minimal, unfortunately.
Why do you think healthcare systems are leaving these areas? I have to think that some of these counties had maternity care and they closed.
So, unfortunately,
it comes down to the money.
It comes down to the money.
I can tell that, yes.
You know, we live in a for-profit healthcare system, and actually, Chartis, this health analytics company, did a survey and found that 418 rural hospitals across the nation are operating in the red, right? And so that's a staggering number when you think about, you know, just one hospital serving tens of thousands of people, often being the only place that will serve tens of thousands of people, but then also contributing to the economy, right? Like that's jobs. Like that's whether it just be for doctors or for cleaning staff or anybody in between. But when you have a smaller population who might not need services as often as like an urban population where you have a higher number of people, they're not making a ton of money. But because they're in a rural area with less people, that doesn't mean that their stuff costs less, right? It doesn't mean that they can say, well, hey, can we get a discount on this really expensive cancer treatment equipment, you know, and because we don't have, and like, no, and they also have standards of care to keep up, right? And so there's cost that's involved in that. They don't get a slide on lower standards of care just because like they're in a rural area. There's also a really complex thing called the wage index, the Medicare wage index. So it was built in the 1980s. And this is something that when I was talking to experts in the field, basically said, like, this is setting us up to fail. Like, we've been set up to fail for the last couple of decades because of this thing called the wage index. And so it's a very complex way of essentially determining how hospitals are being reimbursed through government-sponsored health care, like Medicare. Again, built in the 1980s, it assumed that cost of living in rural areas was lower and that there were more commercial payers in these areas, right? Because in a lot of these areas, there were once manufacturing jobs, there were mining jobs, there were things that, you know, kept the community together and had that had health insurance to give. A lot of those jobs have completely dried up in these areas. And so what you have are less commercial payers and more Medicaid and Medicare payers. And that's 2.5 times less that they're getting paid from Medicaid and Medicare than a commercial payer.
And so a procedure, they can get more money from a private insurance company, but what Medicare or Medicaid reimburses the hospital is a lower rate.
Yes.
Because of, okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Scott Cantley, he's CEO of Memorial Health Systems, who's super helpful for this piece. You know, he's saying rough, and he's in southeastern Ohio, mostly rural, also in West Virginia, like 80 to 70% of the people who are paying into his system are Medicaid and Medicare. And of course, they need care too. They deserve care. You know, everyone deserves health care. But when you live in a for-profit healthcare system, those people aren't going to be keeping you afloat. That's not, you're not going to thrive like urban systems that have a much higher rate of commercial payers because the money's just not there.
And there is some encouraging news on the front of women's care. Memorial Healthcare System is building its first ever Women and Children's Hospital in Washington County. You wrote about that the state funding for this was unprecedented. How did this come about that they decided they needed to? Because the idea of adding, I mean, hospitals around Columbus are building, but adding a rural hospital in a less populated area probably is an outlier.
Yeah, so it's an outlier just in general. Like, the state does not give money to hospitals.
Yeah.
That's not a thing that happens. So this was why this was super rare, and we were approached about this, you know, even though it's not technically within our coverage area. Like, hey, this is a really big deal. We're getting $30 million from the state. This does not happen. It was because of relentless lobbying on part of the people who wanted this project to happen. Because, you know, that 50 to 100 mile number that I gave, that 2 hour drive, that's the reality for people in Belpre, Ohio, in Washington County. And so the fact that they're building this hospital would be life changing for this region, not just healthcare wise, but also economically. And so that's what they were going to the state for and saying, hey, this is going to change lives. This is going to this is providing a need on so many different levels. Like, but we need help to build it. And so that, again, very, very rare, but very, very hopeful, very much providing that hope. And that should be finished, I think, 2026 or 2027. So it's not that far off in the future where people could actually be getting care where they live, which was not a reality before then.
You also wrote about some of the creative workarounds that are happening. You wrote about a mobile van that travels, and it's focusing right now on the wellness of school-age children. So Adina Health, is that right?
Yes.
Tell me about their mobile van initiative.
Yeah, so they have a van. It looks like a giant RV, essentially. But inside, it is a mobile doctor's clinic. And so you have a little lobby waiting area, you know, you have refrigeration for different kinds of medicines, you have places where people can lie down, where people can, you know, receive care, and they drive around to these different schools. They have a very particular schedule, and they provide care to the kids, certainly, but schools are a very central place in our community, and so they're often also providing care to parents, they're providing care to teachers, they're providing care to all of this preventative care, primarily, you know, doing those kinds of checkups that maybe, you know, two working parents can't necessarily get their kid to their yearly checkup on a particular date, like maybe they have to miss it or something like that. And there's a bunch of reasons that, you know, people might not necessarily be able to make it to things that would be preventative care. But this, that's what they're hoping to change, is by making these mobile clinics, well, first of all, mobile so that the care can come to you. Also putting them in a place that's really central to the community, building that community trust, right? Because, I mean, who hasn't been burned in some way or another by a healthcare system? And then, but also bringing that care to them so that they can get it when they need it without having to disrupt very busy, hardworking lives.
Yeah. And so I would say that, you know, these mobile units are not going to be doing surgery, but they can be that primary care doctor pathway. They can provide that. Do you see something like this as being a creative solution that might help fill these gaps?
Oh, absolutely. And Nationwide Children's has spearheaded this model too. This is something that they're working on around the state. The thing, when you look at a lot of the reasons that people in rural communities are sicker than their urban counterparts, a lot of it is stuff that could utilize preventative care. Right. So when it's related to heart, things like cancer and obviously having a baby, very, very different. But you have things like heart care. You have things like, for example, one of the nurses told me that they've had kids who have ear infections go unchecked and then they have hearing loss later. There's a lot of ways in which preventative care is going to fill this chasm of a gap. Is it going to solve everything? No, but it's a very creative solution to just educating people on their health, making sure they get that preventative care, and providing it to the community.
That was Columbus Dispatch healthcare reporter Samantha Hendrickson. She wrote several stories about rural healthcare. I'm sure there's more to come.
Oh, absolutely.
thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And coming up, free clinics help fill the gaps in the medical care system in rural Ohio. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Hundreds of thousands of rural Ohioans live in some kind of healthcare desert. But what does that look like? To find out, all you need to do is visit a free clinic in one of the impacted counties. At the Hope Clinic in Ross County, it's not unusual to find a line out the door and a small staff caring for a multitude of medical needs. Jason Coma is executive director of the Charitable Healthcare Network, which has 50-plus clinics in the state, including one in Ross County and more than a dozen in rural counties. Welcome to All Sides, Jason.
Thank you, Amy. Thanks for having me. I want to start just real quick by saying we appreciate the opportunity to dive into a really complex topic, and kudos to Samantha and the Dispatch's work. And I know it's something All Sides does every day, but the ability to have a conversation about something so important is just vital. That might be a promo I just cut for you accidentally, but I want to say thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, rural healthcare is a complex issue. I don't think we're going to solve it today, but we'll be working on it, right? So the free clinics, how did the free clinic become a solution for some of these rural communities? Tell me about their impact.
Sure. You know, one of the things I say to folks all across the state whenever I have a chance to talk about free clinics and charitable providers is imagine what it's like to get sick. No one likes it, right? Mm-hmm. We certainly, no one wants to wake up and go to the doctor. But then imagine if you don't know where you can go and you certainly can't afford it. That's the role that free clinics and charitable providers play across the state of Ohio. We fill the gaps, the true safety net of the healthcare safety net. You know, one of the things that's been brought up certainly throughout this show earlier was Morgan County. Right. Mm-hmm. And all the trials and tribulations that are there. We've got a clinic that goes similar to what you talked about last segment on a mobile unit to Morgan County. The OU Heritage Clinic will be there in March. It fills the gaps. Now, that is just once every couple of weeks, so it doesn't solve the problem. But it is preventive care for free for folks who need it, when they need it, and where they need it. And it's one of the things our clinic in Ross County does really well as well.
So are you able to tell me about staffing? Are you able to keep staff up at these clinics if someone comes, even if they're only open, you know, sporadically, or they're a mobile unit that only comes sometimes? Can they develop a relationship with a healthcare provider?
Sure. Bubblegum, duct tape, and a lot of prayers, right?
Yeah.
And so we're very blessed across the state to be able to get providers who volunteer most of the time. Mm. So nurses, doctors who want to give back to their communities, want to help support some larger clinics, including the one that I mentioned that's located with OU and Heritage Community Clinics. They do have regular staff, a little bit more, that stays consistent. I think one of the things that we try and provide throughout the network is primary care that may not be a healthcare home, but we fill that gap when we need to. So it's sort of a little less acute than urgent care, but we're there to help you when you need it and where you need it. And so our goal ultimately is to work with other aspects of the healthcare delivery system to get a patient a true healthcare home. But sometimes that's not possible, mm-hmm. like in rural Ohio, for instance.
So you're not doing surgery there,
but you're
taking care of people who have heart problems. You're trying to do preventative things as well. Are people making, annual appointments, or are they, most people who come to you, are they sick?
Sure. So it's a little bit of both, right? So again, 56 clinics caring for patients in 86 of Ohio's 88 counties. Mm-hmm. These are primary care clinics where the quality of care is no different than a doctor's office where you or I would go, nor should it be, right? So it's high quality care, but it's also people who are managing things like diabetes, managing things like cardiovascular concerns, oftentimes getting their medications at those clinics as well, or getting the opportunity to get them and support to purchase them at the clinic. So it really is the ability to care for patients with chronic conditions, preventive care, and ongoing care. A lot of times it's walk-ins. Sometimes it's scheduling appointments. It isn't as complex, though, as, you know, we'll see you next May for your annual wellness exam, so to speak. But it is the care needed for folks when they need it and where they need it. And one thing in particular that I would highlight, and this came up again in the last segment about deserts for pharmacies, you know, Hope Clinic, who I know we've got, we're going to talk about a little bit as well, has a pharmacy within their clinic. Mm. And then there are also four other charitable pharmacies throughout the state that help get patients access to medication, because it's, you know, so many different pieces of the puzzle get connected in.
And also joining us right now is Karen Frey, Director of Nursing for the Hope Clinic in Ross County. She has been in the nursing profession for nearly 5 decades. Thanks for joining us, Karen.
Thank you. Glad I could be here.
And let's start with what you see on the ground there in Ross County at the Hope Clinic. I imagine that no day is the same, but can you give me a sense of the type of cases that are being handled there?
We have patients coming to the pharmacy who do not either do not have insurance to cover their medications, or if they do have insurance, the medications are too costly for them to get. As far as our medical patients that we see, we have people who may be employed at low-paying jobs, have no health care, and most of them have chronic health problems. Occasionally, we will have some come in with just, you know, an acute illness, a cold, all of a sudden something happened and I hurt my back, or, you know, that sort of thing. But we see the majority of our patients are patients who have chronic health problems that without our clinic, they would not have those issues addressed.
That's Karen Frey, Director of Nursing for the Hope Clinic in Ross County. And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about rural healthcare and the state's healthcare deserts. Karen, how would you characterize the overall health of the residents that you see come to the clinic?
Most of them need some assistance with their health. They're not in optimal, you know, you and I try and stay healthy. We make it regularly to the doctor and do our preventative care. Most of these people have not done that because of affordability. They just feel they can't afford it. I had a lady this week come and said, if it can't be paid for, I won't be doing it.
Mm.
That was a GYN appointment, you know, and we all know that those are are lifesaver things.
And Jason Coma, executive director of the Charitable Healthcare Network, tell me about paying for it. What do people have to pay when they come to one of your clinics?
So within the definition, it is a free clinic. Mm-hmm. And so there is no cost at nearly every clinic around the state. Some of them do bill Medicaid, but it's a very small percentage of those clinics. But it ultimately is free. If you need the care, we'll get you the care and help you get as well as possible. I also want to highlight something that Karen said to really mm-hmm. just punctuate it. You know, oftentimes, you know, folks think about these type of clinics, free clinics, et cetera. The individuals that come there are hardworking Ohioans. Mm-hmm. These are people that are just struggling to meet, have ends meet, don't know where to go. And we fill that gap in helping provide them care. This is moms, dads, brothers, sisters, folks that we probably all know who are working a couple of jobs and just don't have health insurance. And, hey, we all get sick, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what our clinics throughout the network are able to provide for them.
And, Karen, how do you work as a nurse there to build trust with the patients? I mean, do you have to convince them? Like, you have to say, I promise this is free. It is free.
Well, we make sure that if, you know, we tell them it is, there will be no cost to them. If they get a bill from the facility that does the lab work, I tell them to bring them to me, and I go to the hospital, and we, you know, give them the information that they need so that it is put down as, I'll say, charity, a charity case, as opposed to being billed to the patient. Patients also, if we have to refer them for something, we get them in the program at the hospitals or get them to the program for the HCAP, the financial aid for the hospital, which is set down by, you know, government guidelines. And so we try and, you know, make sure they know. We have had some that have been very difficult to convince that they will not have to pay, but we have managed to show them and to help them in that area.
Jason, the healthcare system is complicated. I mean, that's the understatement of the year. I can imagine that things slip through the cracks like that. Like a lab is supposed to just run it for free, but they bill them anyway. Sure. And like things happen like
yeah.
that.
Oftentimes at a lot of these clinics, you'll get referred out to, again, similar to you mentioned, you know, not all care happens there. Sometimes it's labs that are billed out or labs that are scheduled outside of the clinic, perhaps at a lab location, potentially at a hospital system, et cetera, where unexpected costs come down the line. But our clinics work with the local hospitals, and local hospitals do have policies to help folks out in those instances. I also want to recognize Karen and the dignity. It's awesome that she provides every patient that walks in that door because, you know, it's not your best day when you're sick and you also don't know how to pay for that care and don't know where to go. And Karen is amazing in working with each and every patient, building that trust. And we've got thousands of folks like her around the state that provide that care. And I just want to thank her and so much.
Thank you.
Well, Karen, you have a big fan here. So Karen, you've been in the business 50 years. You've been a nurse for a long time. What mm-hmm. changes would you like to see maybe at the state level to help rural counties like yours?
One, be able to meet the need, help get the word out that there are people like the charitable clinics that can give them the care or get them directed to the care they need. We also need help with transportation. We have paid for a taxi to pick patients up that live several miles away. And when I say several, in the next county over, to bring them in because they couldn't drive and they didn't have transportation. So those are needs that we have that need to be met.
And Jason's nodding his head. Transportation needs are a big deal.
Transportation is huge, especially if you think about, you know, the distance sometimes between where folks live and the size of a rural county and, you know, getting miles away. I'd also note that we would not be able to do what we do without the support of the Ohio Department of Health. There is $1.75 million provided each year in the state budget to help support free clinics. And free clinics on that $1.75 million provided care that was valued at nearly $225 million. Mm-hmm. That's quite the return on investment, I will say. But I'd also would be remiss if I didn't, you know, appreciate the support from the legislature, from the Department of Health for, you know, understanding the gap that free clinics and charitable clinics fill in the state. And in terms of getting the word out, if anybody listening or those that, you know, would happen to see this online, our website is charitablehealth.org. There is a find a clinic icon in the upper left corner. You can go there, you can search, and you can see a clinic in your community, or our number's on there and you can call our staff and we'll get you connected.
Now, Ohio is doing some things right. There's a Medicaid expansion, and there's the $1.7 million from the state for the free clinics. Does your clinic work with Medicaid? Do you bill Medicaid? Is that a part of it?
So by and large, almost all the clinics within the charitable healthcare network do not bill Medicaid. Mm. There's about three or four that are a little bit larger, more sophisticated type clinics where a portion of it they bill Medicaid, but it is less than like 5% of the total care that's provided. So our goal is to not have sometimes the complicated barriers that are put forward in terms of delivery of care, mm-hmm. and also take folks and care for them and then, you know, potentially get them connected to that coverage so they can move on somewhere else if there is a somewhere else to be cared for. And oftentimes, as we've noted today, there isn't. So we are those that fill the gap.
Do your clinics all have regular hours? Are they open like Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, or are they all different?
They're a little bit different. I think one of the things that our clinics within the state do is really represent the community that they're in. And so a community like Chillicothe looks a little bit different than Bryan, Ohio, and far northwest Ohio. And so our clinics try to meet the needs of that community. Sometimes that is once a month. Sometimes that is a couple times a week. In the instance of Chillicothe and Ross County, you know, Mondays they are there, both with the pharmacy and the clinic. So it's a little bit different in each place. And that's one of the things, and I don't want to give another plug, but I will, to charitablehealth.org, find a clinic. And you've got all of the hours, all of the time. And again, if people have trouble navigating that, my office phone number is on there. Give me a call. We'll call you back. We'll get you connected.
Do you have set buildings, though? Like, you have space to be
absolutely.
In?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So there's set buildings, and then there's also a couple of locations that are mobile units, like mm-hmm. we mentioned off the top. The Heritage Clinics, funded by Ohio University College of Medicine, Heritage College of Medicine, does a bunch of mobile clinics really trying to help this rural healthcare issue. They're in, you know, Logan, they're in Belpre in Washington County, they're in Morgan County in McConnellsville. But that is, you know, every couple of weeks, and it really just is, it fills the gap but doesn't you know, perhaps provide the type of care that is needed for continuous preventative care. But, you know, our goal is to fill the gap.
And Karen, you mentioned at the Hope Clinic, you mentioned diabetes and heart conditions and the reasons you see people come into the clinic, but you also spent years working in maternity services. Is your clinic able to help women who are seeking maternal health care too?
At present time, no, we are not. I mean, we can do some sexually transmitted disease testing. We can do pregnancy tests, but we do not have any physicians that come in as OBGYN and follow them throughout a pregnancy. We do use the Southeastern Ohio Breast and Cervical Cancer Project through the Noble County Health Department to get mammograms, pap smears, that sort of thing. If we have a patient that comes to us and is pregnant, we do a referral to one of the local OBGYN doctors and try and get them the financial aid to help with that. But as far as actual continual care, we do not do it in the clinic. We have resources where we can guide people to.
And so, Jason, there's lots of different I can single out maternity care, but there's lots of different specialties that your clinic just isn't going to be able to provide everything, but you're trying to provide something.
That's right. And it's about, you know, filling the gaps. Mm-hmm. It's about providing some level of primary care that it might be a little bit episodic, but that's where partnerships come into play. Mm-hmm. You know, in local communities, being partners with the local hospitals, being partners with the federally qualified health centers, which are funded doctor's offices, for lack of a better word, that get funding from the federal government to be able to take care of those maternity patients. And so, you know, if you think about the continuum of care, we're kind of the entry point. Mm-hmm. And then so, you know, identifying the patient that perhaps she didn't know she was pregnant, providing that care, and then referring her to someone that gets her coverage, that gets her the ongoing care that is so needed during, you know, during maternity and the like. But without us on this end, you know, everyone falls through the cracks. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. We help.
Thank you to Jason Coma, Executive Director of the Charitable Healthcare Network. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much.
And also thanks to Karen Fry, Director of Nursing for the Hope Clinic in Ross County. Karen, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk about the future of rural healthcare and some more solutions. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Ohio is not alone in experiencing healthcare deserts. It's a scenario playing out across the U.S. More than 400 rural hospitals are at risk of closing. And approximately half of the rural hospitals in the country are operating in the red. We're talking this hour about how we got here. And in this segment, we're going to talk about creative solutions to get rural Ohioans the care they need. Joining us is John Palmer, Director of Media and Public Relations for the Ohio Hospital Association, which represents and advocates for hospitals in the state. Welcome to All Sides, John.
Thank you, Amy.
And before we begin talking about solutions, we need to talk a little bit more about how we got so many healthcare deserts. You know, some might say it's the fault of the for-profit hospital system. I know you didn't invent the for-profit hospital system, but rural areas do not have enough people to make it financially feasible. Is that a part of the issue here?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, the reality is in rural healthcare, it's an important topic because our state is predominantly a rural state. We're talking about close to 20% of Ohioans, over 2 million that live in non-metro areas. And then you dive in even deeper, you know, all but five counties have more than 50% of the area classified as rural. So it's a pretty big component of our state. We have nine counties that don't have a full acute care hospital, and those are mostly in the eastern area of our state. And those are out of, I think, the most rural, those that represents that southeast area. And so, yeah, that is a challenge. You also have a dynamic of commercial and employers in those areas as well. You have an aging population and even broader with chronic disease management. I mean, 15% of Ohioans living in Ohio have three or more chronic conditions as well, which has a lot of need in healthcare delivery. And we know that healthcare is changing in regards to, it's not just a hospital building, but you're looking at outpatient centers, mobile clinics, telehealth, vans, you name it. I mean, it's wherever we can make an impact, you're seeing those investments that are made that hospitals can pursue.
Do you see the Ohio Hospital Association, you know, the bigger hospitals working to get into these rural areas in ways of mobile clinics, that kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. And not just mobile clinics, but just affiliations. And so you'll see hospitals collaborating and partnering with other healthcare organizations to bring in particular service lines and providers. And you've seen that happening more and more. But it could also be working in schools. And I know the state earlier this year launched an initiative to put healthcare providers in various elementary schools to really get at pediatric care And you see a lot of hospitals stepping up and making those investments. But those are going to be important, really, to help close the gap in many areas.
I want to bring into the conversation now the perspective of a rural hospital leader. Stacey Gabriel is president and CEO of Hocking Valley Community Hospital, which serves residents of Hocking County, and it's been serving them for more than a century. And thank you for joining us, Stacey.
Thank you, Amy, for having me. A pleasure to be here.
So from your vantage point, how would you characterize the state of rural healthcare in your area of the state?
It's critical. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we're tired of talking about COVID, but I think that really came to light during when COVID happened. You know, a lot of patients would not have received healthcare were it not for those rural facilities. And so I think it really highlighted and brought to light the importance of having them around. You know, you talked about all of the closures that are imminent with those rural hospitals. And, you know, if that happens, it just truly leaves a gap in, you know, so many lives. You know, we took care of about 190,000 patients last year, both inpatient, outpatient, you know, coming in and out of the facility. And you just think about if they had to travel 20 minutes, even 30 minutes to get, you know, emergency services, you know, somebody having a heart attack, they could not make it. So it just, you know, and the other part of that is rural Americans, like, they don't want to have to drive to get healthcare. So, you know, they want to be 10, 15, 20 minutes, you know, from a primary care provider or, you know, an emergency department. And to think, you know, to have to drive 45, 50 minutes to get that healthcare, we just know that they don't want to do that. So it's just super critical now that, you know, we kind of put a lens on rural when we're thinking about healthcare policy and changes that, you know, could impact us, and not necessarily how does that impact the large systems that have the, you know, 300-400 days cash on hand. What's that going to do to the smaller facilities that are operating with 15, 20, 25 days cash on hand? And that's really what we need to look at and think about in terms of healthcare policy and reform.
Yeah, I mean, that cash on hand idea. How has your hospital been able to survive all the healthcare twists and turns? Your county has about 27,000 residents, right? So
that is correct.
Yeah, but you said you served 190,000 people. So people are coming from surrounding areas
all
too.
Over. Yeah. Okay. So we serve, you know, Vinton County, Athens County, Hocking County. You know, we are a large tourist destination. So about 5 million people visit us every year. So we have those patients coming in and out of our hospital as well. So you just have to be creative. And, you know, sometimes it's talking about certain service lines. That's something that we do on a regular basis. We look at all the services we offer. Not necessarily that, you know, we have to make money from them, but we at least have to break even and cover our expenses. And, you know, that's another thing that has just escalated, you know, after COVID happened was, you know, the cost of providing healthcare. It's just escalated astronomically. So it is definitely a balancing act. It's something that we talk about, you know, our CFO on a daily basis is looking at cash on hand. We're talking about it, you know, every week at our senior leadership team. It's important because, you know, our mission is to provide care close to home now and into the future. And we want to make sure that we live by that mission and we can continue to do that for patients today and for years to come.
Do you have more cash on hand if you have more people who have private insurance than if you have more patients that are Medicare or Medicaid?
Absolutely. And about 75 to 80% of our patients are Medicare and Medicaid. So we definitely will be keeping a close eye on any of those changes that might be coming down with those two programs, especially with reimbursement and how that all might change. So yeah, the more commercial payers, the better. But, you know, we are also not immune to losing about 10,000 jobs over the last 20, you know, years with industry and a lot of manufacturing. You know, we had a Goodyear plant, we had a metal production plant, and they've just gone away over the last 20 years. So that certainly has had an impact too.
And John Palmer with the Ohio Hospital Association, the lawmakers are working on the budget right now. Have you looked through the budget? Is there money in there for rural healthcare and hospitals in these deserts?
Yeah, we think that this is an important budget, particularly where we see things going with healthcare services for the communities that we're serving. You know, Ohio has 33 rural hospitals and 33 critical access hospitals. All of them are not just emergency care, but there's inpatient care happening, laboratory testing, rehab, lawn care, and even primary care. And some of those are still providing maternity services. And so it is a very important time in regards to where we can get predictable financials over the biennium of the next state budget, particularly with Medicaid and Medicare, because government payers is a huge portion for many of our rural hospitals in this case. So it's definitely something we'll be promoting and looking into this year.
And, you know, anyone who lives in a city like Columbus is going to see a lot of growth and expansion for hospitals, construction projects on all of the major hospitals around here. How do you talk about these less populous hospitals whenever they know that there's bigger hospitals expanding in every major city?
Well, some of the trends we're seeing nationally, I mean, last year, 72% of rural hospitals had an operating margin of 0% or less. That's just not a sustainable situation. We've had about 11 hospital closures in the last 8 years. Seven of those are in rural areas. And 18 hospitals have affiliated with another healthcare organization in the last 9 years, 10 of those in rural areas. So it is pretty substantial. And when you look at a service line like maternity, there's been a lot of closures in Ohio in recent years, and 10 occurring in rural areas. So those are pretty alarming statistics, and it's something that, regardless, we still have Ohioans that are looking to get healthcare services locally, and it's something that I think a lot of partners and collaborators are going to be looking at how do we help turn the tide on some of these situations.
And Stacey Gabriel, the CEO of Hocking Valley Community Hospital, your hospital is undergoing some construction. Can you tell us about those plans?
Well, we are hoping to undergo construction.
Oh, you're hoping. Okay.
So we have a plan, but we are trying to work through the USDA to do some low interest financing. And it's with new administration and everything going on, a lot of those discussions have kind of come to, I don't want to say a standstill, but it's been, it's tested some patience. But, you know, that's, you know, when you think about the care that you deliver, you know, our hospital was built back in the 1960s. It was designed to do inpatient care predominantly. And we know that that tide has turned to focus more on outpatients. So, you know, we try to make the best with the space that we have, but it's an aging facility, definitely needs some upgrades. It needs a facelift, and, you know, a lot of efficiencies can be gained by, you know, the project that we want to do. But it just, it's hard to do. Like you said, those operating margins continue to shrink. And so, you know, you look for grant opportunities, low interest rate funding opportunities. And so we're continuing to vet out all of the financing options, but it's not easy. I will say that, but definitely much needed, you know, and we're not the only hospital in that boat. You know, a lot of hospitals are similar to ours that were built with the Hill-Burton funds back in the 60s. And we just, you know, we're ready for an upgrade and an infrastructure change.
Now, John mentioned maternity care as well, that more than a dozen maternity wards in the state have closed. What kind of maternity care does Hocking Valley Community Hospital have?
So we actually had to close our maternity unit about 12 years ago. The majority of our patients that we took care of were Medicaid patients. And with the regulations imposed by the Department of Health, and reimbursement was not that great for those patients, it just became hard for us to keep that service open. So, you know, we're located about 30 minutes from two different hospitals that also provide maternity services. And that seemed to be where the community, for the most part, would choose to go to get those OB services and have their babies. So a hard decision to make, but, you know, that was one of the service lines that we closed. And more recently, in 2022, we had to close our geriatric behavioral health unit because, again, you know, we saw declining reimbursement, with telehealth being a little more widely accepted, especially for, you know, behavioral issues. You know, a lot of our patients would come from nursing home referrals that maybe needed medication adjustment, but they were able to do that with telehealth. So we saw declining referrals. And then, again, there were some regulatory issues that really just made it impossible for us to keep that unit open. So we had to also close that one down. So unfortunate, but again, you know, as a small hospital, you really have to look at what it is that your community needs, where you can do the most good, and make sure that you're focusing on those services and having those resources available for the patients when needed.
John, unfortunately, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I wanted to ask you about one thing Stacey mentioned, which was having the outpatient ability as well as being an inpatient hospital. Are a lot of rural hospitals looking toward that?
It's where the shift is happening with consumers and patient care. We're able to do more in outpatient settings. Consumers appreciate and having that service in that setting. And so you see that shift happening more to outpatient services.
Thanks to John Palmer, Director of Media and Public Relations at the Ohio Hospital Association. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Stacey Gabriel, CEO of the Hocking Valley Community Hospital. Thanks for being here, Stacey.
Thank you so much, Amy.
And this has been All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.